Gungatrek SBS Hayrena.
It was a busy and sometimes hectic year for the Armenian National Committee of Australia. To give us a summary of 2019, we have online Haik Kayserian, Executive Director of ANCA. Haik, welcome to SBS Armenian.
Thank you, Vahe. Good to be with you.
Haik, let's start from the latest, the acknowledgement of the Armenian Genocide by US Congress and the expectations of the Australian Armenian community. Do you think with Congress's decision there is hope for a positive outcome in Australia?
Yeah, look, I think first of all I'd like to take this opportunity to publicly congratulate my colleagues at the Armenian National Committee of America. We can't gloss over or underestimate how big a deal it is when the representatives of a superpower collectively and so comprehensively recognise the Armenian Genocide as fact, reject Turkish denialism in such a profound way. And I think that is because over many years, the Armenian National Committee of America have stuck to their guns, have understood the scene, have gotten over the disappointments, which probably reached their pinnacle when Barack Obama went back on his word in 2009, I believe it was, and decided that rather than focusing on a president who is voted on by 50% of voters in the country, they're going to focus on the parliament, which is voted by 100% of the public. And what ended up coming as a result of that shift is a shift in paradigm for the Armenian cause. The United States recognizing the Armenian Genocide, House of Representatives 405-11 and the Senate 100-0, means that there was never really a debate on fact. There wasn't a debate on whether the genocide was what it was. There was only an issue about will, and the fact that our team over there were able to establish the relationships and make people understand through information about what our ancestors went through. When the opportunity arose, they were able to capitalize on it by introducing the motion and seeing such a phenomenal success. So I wanted to start by congratulating them for what is a genuinely big deal for the Armenian cause. I think it's a turning point. I think it's an opportunity for Australia, but I think it's also an opportunity more globally for justice for the Armenian genocide. The way I would define where we are in terms of Armenian Australians is not dissimilar to where our colleagues were before these resolutions were passed in the United States Congress. We also have, I believe, the majority of the parliament, be that the House of Representatives or the Senate, knowing that the Armenian genocide is fact, and debate has never existed really as long as I've been involved in this cause on the historical reality of the Armenian genocide. What has existed is obviously the geopolitical nature of the beast. Now, where similarities can also be drawn is public opinion. I think public opinion in the US in recent years, since Obama's rejection in particular, the centenary of the genocide, got to the point where even the majority of the American public who were knowledge on this issue knew that the Armenian genocide was fact, but obviously they hadn't taken the step. I believe in the last 18 months or so, the Australian public, who are obviously knowledge on this issue, have also been taken along the same path because of opportunities that have arisen to make this issue public. Just in the last year, for example, we've had the Alan Jones take up this issue when Scott Morrison performed the backflip with his Armenian genocide commemoration statement in April. We've also had the newspapers write about it, publish op-eds from people like Dr. Stepan Kerkisharian to say that the Armenian genocide is nothing but fact and Australia should reject this foreign gag order that exists from the Turkish dictatorship, and it should recognise the Armenian genocide for what it was, and nobody should be playing word games with the issue. Many will say, Alan Jones caters for part of the population. That's true, but we've also had, the Nine network of newspapers that don't always sing from the same hymn sheet as Alan Jones. We've had political parties and members of political parties that have made this issue front and center at different occasions over the last 18 months. which is also something that wasn't the case before that, which I think is also shaping public opinion in Australia. We've had two debates in the parliament where over 15, 20 members of parliament in the House of Representatives called on the Armenian Genocide to be recognised by Australia in the context, of course, of Australia's first major humanitarian relief effort and last year's 70th anniversary of the UN Genocide Convention. And that included people of the major parties, minor parties. We've got people like the Greens, who are on the opposite side of politics to where Alan Jones would probably be, also calling for the genocide to be recognised as party policy. We've got the Centre Alliance doing the same. We've got the New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies calling for Australia to recognise the genocide. We've got the Australian Christian Lobby calling for Australia to recognise the genocide. So the scene is set, whether that be in Parliament or in the public sphere, to have this issue dealt with. And I believe we're at the stage where we're looking for opportunities like one came obviously with the Kurdish issue that Trump was dealing with in the United States to occur here in Australia. When Erdogan made comments in March, that was an opportunity to push this issue, and we did. We did get some public opinion shift as a result of that. When Scott Morrison's backflip occurred, that was another opportunity. This US resolution passing the Senate following the comprehensive passing of the House presents another opportunity for us to remind our legislators that whatever the political processes are, we need to exercise those processes, and we need to bring Australia on the right side of history as the elected representatives of a public that knows the Armenian Genocide to be fact.
Hayk, is the Anzac commemoration a major stumbling block, taking into account Prime Minister's words earlier this year?
Correct. Well, look, I believe it is. I think many people, including the Foreign Ministry, will not necessarily give credence to that theory because nobody wants to admit that they are being influenced in shaping Australia's foreign policy by the influence of a foreign dictatorship, and in this case, not just the influence, but the threat of a foreign dictatorship. As you correctly pointed out, Bahir, during the Scott Morrison backflip debacle, a lot of attention was put to this issue to the extent that the Prime Minister was in Darwin in the Northern Territory facing the press when he was trying to promote one of his local candidates over there. And one of the journalists asked about this particular issue, calling his backflip out, saying, "You used to recognise this as genocide, what's changed?" And he did answer by making Turkey part of his reasoning and the fact that we have been working hard to make the Gallipoli pilgrimage go smoothly or work, and therefore it is important that I act as a prime minister and not a public member of society. Obviously, when he was a member of parliament and used the word genocide, he wasn't, you know, a public citizen. He was still a member of parliament, an elected member of office. But obviously, he was stumped by the question, and in his answer, he quite openly admitted that there was an issue there. We also remember in 2013, I mean, when the New South Wales Parliament was recognising the genocide for a second time, the press coverage that ensued included the Turkish consul to New South Wales openly stated on the ABC television that the visas of those who were part of the recognition process would not be granted if they wanted to visit Gallipoli and pay their respects to the Anzac soldiers. We believe, obviously, that if the United States elected representatives can see past the threats of Turkey, and I believe they have as much reasons to make excuses for not recognising the genocide on sensitive foreign relations grounds, considering the Incirlik army base in Turkey is so pivotal to the US presence in the Middle East, I believe that Australia can see past that as well. I think that the Gallipoli threat is there. Probably the major thing that comes to the mind of an elected official part of the administration when they're talking about, what should we release as a statement on April 24th. However, the time has come for Australia to stand up to this foreign gag order. to say that enough is enough. You can no longer use our Anzac soldiers' graves as a bargaining chip to determine Australia's stance on a very important human rights issue, which is a current human rights issue. Australia needs to recognise the Armenian genocide, the genocide of the Greeks, the genocide of the Assyrians, because if you don't, you give impunity to genocides that are occurring today, like what we're seeing happen to the Rohingyas in Myanmar.
Hayk, before summing up the year, there are two topics we haven't covered yet. One is the Youth Advocates Program. Could you give some information about the program and how young people can participate in the program?
Sure, Vahed. This is probably our feel-good week when it comes to the work that the Armenian National Committee does in any given 12 months. Last year, we launched the ANCAU Youth Advocates Program, and we continued that this year. As you pointed out, in November, we took around a dozen university-aged Armenians to Canberra in order to give them a crash course, so to speak, in advocacy, how to advocate for issues that are important to them, but also issues, obviously, that are important to Armenians, to see the work that the Armenian National Committee does. But it's not just theoretical. The reason we take them to Canberra is part of the program means they go to Parliament House. They have mock advocacy sessions with actual politicians where they're going and they're arguing about issues that are important to them. And the politicians very kindly play the part of the obstacle. So even with some politicians who might agree with the arguments that our students, our youth advocates are presenting to them, they will challenge them on those ideas in order to give them that real-life experience of advocacy. Not everybody, obviously, at the other end of the table agrees with you when you're advocating for your issues. We chose the topic this year of refugee policy, and the homework for our youth advocates was to familiarise themselves with the different policies that have existed in Australia and exist today, and for them individually, obviously, to come up with their own opinions on these issues. And they arrived in Canberra after receiving a crash course in advocacy from the head of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry Canberra office, so the Jewish community's equivalent of the ANC in Canberra. Their head was the one that delivered an advocacy 101 class, so to speak, to our youth advocates to give them a bit of an idea on some of the best practices in advocacy, some of her experiences as well. And then we headed over to Parliament House where they met with the Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, Christina Keneally, and also the Green spokesperson on refugee policy, who is Nick McKim. They were able to ask questions, challenge those policies, understand the issues, and also see the two exchange barbs and debates on the issue. Then they headed into the mock advocacy sessions with, I believe we met with 10 different politicians during that mock advocacy sessions, Liberal, Labor, Green. And we also organised for them to meet with Kaila Lusikyan, a Walkley Award-winning journalist who covers politics in Canberra. So they were able to see how the press operates on a day-to-day basis in the press gallery in Canberra. They also met with a lobbyist, somebody from our board, Sasun Grigorian, who basically runs government relations in the Asia-Pacific for Salesforce, and he was able to show the private interests that exist in Parliament, and he was obviously a former advisor to a Premier of New South Wales. Therefore, he was able to give insight about how political operatives conduct their duties on a day-to-day basis. During the 2 days, they also attended question time, before which they met with Joel Fitzgibbon, who is currently the Shadow Agriculture Minister, is a former Defence Minister of this country, and also importantly for this issue, a former government whip, and him and his staff were able to take us through parliamentary procedures before we entered question time, so that the youth advocates were able to understand how question time and parliament actually works in the processes. Overall, I think the youth advocates thoroughly enjoyed the program. I think it would be good to get some of them on your program to get their own thoughts. But from what we were hearing, they were very fulfilled by the experience. You know, 2 days also young Armenians, some of them had never met each other, university age, they were able to spend in Canberra together, develop friendships, and I believe that those friendships will last beyond this program. How people get involved, I believe halfway through next year, roughly around June, we'll release a form, an expression of interest form for those who want to participate. They'll answer a few questions in that application, what they're studying, why they're interested in doing this, what they're hoping to gain out of it, et cetera, et cetera. Our office obviously processes these applications, and then we induct those members who will be successful in meeting the criteria to participate in the program for next year, which will again be in October, November, depending on parliamentary sitting periods and whatnot. I do want to thank, in this instance, firstly, Sarin Solomonian from our office, who coordinated the program this year. She did a tremendous job. But also, very importantly, the Hagop Kortian Scholarship. The Hagop Kortian Scholarship is part of the ANCAU's internship program, and it tries to facilitate young people who want to work in politics or media, the costs that they might have to bear while they get some of the critical experience that they need. So, for example, if they want to volunteer at a politician's office with the aim of getting a job there one day, this internship program can fund their stay in Canberra, fund some of their activities while they're over there, in order for that to be less cumbersome for them and less of a burden financially. Because obviously it is in our interest through programs such as Youth Advocates and our internship program to get more Armenians interested and involved in the political process. The Hagop Kortian Scholarship is a $10,000 annual commitment from the Kortian family in honor of their husband and father, the late Hagop Kortian, who was a founding force of Haitad. And from that $10,000, part of it for the second year running was dedicated to make the Youth Advocates program a reality.
Hi, on the same subject, could you inform us about Goldstone government program?
Sure. This also is an important part of our outreach initiatives at the ANCAU. What we do with Youth Advocates obviously targets university students. Goldstone government is something we're running with Goldstone College, Hamaskane Goldstone College in Sydney, and specifically their years 7, 8, and 9 students. And what we do is throughout the year, the ANCAU runs workshops with years 7, 8, and 9 with the primary goal of basically introducing government and the influence politics has on the day-to-day lives of all of us and even the students. So we basically run different workshops. Year 7, for example, focuses on policy making and debates. So we usually set topics that have a yes and a no side. We split the Year 7 class into two political parties. Each of them elects their leader. Each of them researches their topic. And then in a future workshop, they debate that topic against the other side, the other party within their class. That debate is conducted in a parliamentary setting with a speaker, so they get a real feel of how government debate works. Year 8 and 9 this year, we took it to another level and we made it about an election. The election was held on December the 10th, but in the lead up to the election, we split Year 8 and we split Year 9 into two political parties. Each party elected their leaders. Each party elected their own policies of importance to them. You know, we had parties that focused on climate change, parties that focused on education issues like standardized testing. There were students that focused on issues such as starting school later than current time they start school, which was quite popular. They also focused on issues such as animal cruelty and also ending the cycle of genocide. So these parties elect their leader, who will participate in a final debate, after which the election will occur from the greater student body. Other than the leader, each party has researchers who focus on researching the topics and coming up with the policies, obviously with our assistance, about how, if they win the election, how their party will handle climate change, for example, or one of the other topics. And They also, in each party, have what we called campaigners. And these guys basically prepare posters, flyers, and they distribute it and hang them up around the school in order to attract attention to what their party stands for, what the policies are, all, of course, in the lead up to the election. And on election day, December the 10th, we had Year 8's two parties and their leaders specifically participate in the debate. And the same thing with Year 9. This debate was conducted by in front of the greater student body, who at the end of the debate voted on their chosen parties. And next year, the winner of Year 8 government, for example, that party will be government next year, and the party that lost will be in opposition next year as part of these government workshops. I think that the school should be commended for recognising the importance of introducing students at a young age to politics and the power of government before they have had a chance to decide where their career is going to head, in case some of them are interested in obviously studying courses and degrees that might involve them in the political process at a future date. I will also say we had senior students participate in this as well. For example, the person who moderated the debate on election day was playing the part of a journalist, and she was a senior student at the school as well. So that's roughly what Gulston Government is, and we're always excited to continue these sorts of initiatives and expand them in future years.
Kuzes lësel në mamba të në qëner, unë gëntre Apple Podcasti, Google Podcasti, Spotify i vëra, gam urderen vor podcastet këllëses.